This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. North Carolina is an innovation leader. We've got a lot of people here working in high-tech jobs. Their salaries are competitive. But we have one of the fastest-growing populations with higher-than-average levels of unemployment and low wages in the non-tech fields. A recent report released by the North Carolina Board of Science and Technology tracked the state's innovation progress and found some good news and some bad. Joining us now to talk about the report is John Hardin, Executive Director of the State Department of Commerce's Office of Science and Technology. John, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks a lot. Glad to be here.
So give us the executive summary, some of the crucial findings in this report.
All right. Well, this report it has about 38 different measures of how the state is doing in all things related to innovation. That includes anything from research and development expenditures to venture capital to educational attainment of the population. And overall, if you rank our state compared to all 50 other states, we rank 24th across all of those indicators. On some, we rank really high, such as R&D expenditures to universities. We rank, I think, 5th in the nation, but others we rank low, 47th. And so it's a really mixed bag. Over the last 10 years, we have stayed relatively constant. So the summary judgment that we have in this report is the state of the health of North Carolina's innovation ecosystem is just moderately healthy and is not really improving much.
All right. Well, let's describe that ecosystem then. I think you pointed to some of it. Certainly higher education facilities, their research labs, the amount of capital they might attract, that's part of it. But give us a little broader picture.
All right. The broader picture would be if you picture a pipeline with the inputs being ideas, research and development that could get turned into innovative innovations that again then get turned into innovative products and practices and companies, which ultimately lead to economic development. That's essentially the pipeline. It's not quite that simple. It's not especially linear, but we depict it that way so that people can understand it. And overarching that, you have to have a supportive public policy and public understanding. And we measure as many aspects of that ecosystem as we can. And so I did mention already research and development and venture capital and patents. We also look at educational attainment. We look at broadband access across the state, the influx of population, how we compared to other states, and what's the average educational attainment of the in-migrants.
So where did we rank poorly?
We ranked poorly. Well, let me back up and say where we ranked well first. On, I'd say probably 20% of the indicators that are in here have something to do with the university system, and not just the UNC system, but also the private universities. On almost all of those indicators that are related to the universities, we rank very high. Where we don't rank as high would be things that are related to the K-12 educational system, both the inputs in terms of funding, teacher salaries, things like that. And as far as the outputs either, we're not bottom of the barrel, but we are not as strong in those areas.
Is it really a pipeline, or can universities go out and get grants and be innovation leaders and also attract talent from all over the country and not really be too concerned about the K-12 education within the state?
It is a pipeline, but they definitely need to be concerned with the K-12 education in the state, because a majority of the students that go to universities in North Carolina come from within North Carolina, both in the publics and the privates. And so they are the basic feedstock of the universities. And so if they're not strong and if they're not prepared, then the universities, no matter how strong they are not going to be as strong as they could be.
And over the past decade or so, 12, 13 years, we've seen improvements in that school system. Things are starting to level off, and there are other indicators that suggest we might be headed for decline at the moment. Is there a correlation between how well the universities are doing now and that improvement over the past 15 years in K-12?
We didn't look at that directly in this report, so I can't really say. But I would say that, again, that the inputs to the university system need to be as strong as they can be. And so to the extent that they are improving, that should improve the university system and the innovation ecosystem overall.
What about the population? We know we have a huge, in your report, confirmed this influx of population. I'm assuming it's a diverse influx. What kind of impact does that have on the state, and what do we have to do about it from the public policy standpoint?
It has both good and bad impacts. We did not look at the demographics of the influx, But North Carolina has, I think, the sixth fastest growing population in the nation. We're growing almost twice as fast as the U.S. average. And a majority of that is coming from in-migrants, meaning people coming from other states, not immigrants from other countries and not necessarily internal growth. But we do know a large portion of that is a Hispanic population. We also have a lot of retirees, and we have a lot of people coming in, university students. And those are the obvious ones, but it's a more diverse mix than most states have.
We've talked a lot about the departure of manufacturing jobs from this state, obviously. Do we need to bring those jobs back, or are we focused on the future and a knowledge-based economy?
I think we can actually do both. The knowledge-based economy actually involves manufacturing very heavily, but it's not the manufacturing that we used to think of here in North Carolina, which was traditionally the backbone of North Carolina, textiles and furniture and things like that. Many of those jobs have gone overseas because of lower wage rates in other countries. But what is coming back to North Carolina and other states is high-tech manufacturing. And that's a good thing because high-tech jobs tend to have higher salaries and require higher levels of education and have a large multiplier effect on not just high-tech workers in the area, but all workers in the area. And you may have seen the announcement last week that President Obama and Governor McCrory and NC State announced last week about the Manufacturing Innovation Center Institute at NC State University. That's exactly the type of manufacturing that North Carolina needs, and that will help grow North Carolina's economy.
In a few minutes, we're going to talk about North Carolina's labor history. North Carolina, notoriously unfriendly to organized labor and very friendly to business and manufacturing. In fact, had more manufacturing than any other state in the South, mostly because there weren't unions and workers' rights were not necessarily the first order of business. Do things have to change? Do you have to have a different set of priorities with regard to the labor force when it's a knowledge-based, highly educated labor force?
I'm probably not the best to answer that because I'm not an expert on labor issues. Your later yesterday may be able to answer that better. I don't think there's anything fundamental about our system right now that's holding us back in terms of labor like that. It's the fact that our economy, if you look at the share of our business establishments that are composed of by high-tech industries, we're below average, not dramatically below average, but somewhat below average. And that is due primarily to it's a legacy of the types of industries that dominated in North Carolina. We traditionally were a agricultural and low-wage manufacturing state. And those things don't change overnight. There are certain regions, such as this region, the Research Triangle region, and the Charlotte region, and the Piedmont Triad, where we're above average in terms of high-tech. But those are a minority of the state.
Can you and what about the possibility of outsourcing? Obviously, that's a lot of what happened to the manufacturing jobs. But look, the rest of the world, even the developing world, is starting to catch up. They have a lot of universities in China and India and can produce their own knowledge-based workers.
You're absolutely right. The best way to combat outsourcing is to be strong on those aspects that other countries are competing with us on. And it would be things like talent and technology. And so by investing in R&D facilities, such as what was announced last week, as well as our universities, as well as making sure that our existing industries are as high tech and as innovative as possible, that's the best thing we can do to stay on top competitively.
Getting back to this ecosystem, again, you know, as I painted the scenario of high tech workers, highly educated, innovative workers coming to the state, not caring too much about K-12, and if you didn't have to feed your universities, so what? But that is something attractive to a young professional. So it comes back to this, some of these fundamental points like K-12 education. What has to happen there? Because that one is one of the lagging indicators. What do we have to do?
What has to happen with K-12?
Yes.
I think that the governor and the legislature realize one thing that has to happen, and that is we have to increase teacher salaries. We rank, I think, 46th in the nation in terms of teacher salaries. That by itself will not, rectify the complete situation. But at a minimum, that's necessary. And a lot of the changes that are necessary overall for our innovation ecosystem, there's not a silver bullet. There's not a single thing. A lot of it is just staying steady or increasing slightly on a lot of different things, whether it's support for universities, support for the K-12 system. Marginal changes, when you accumulate those, can make a large cumulative difference.
Does it have to happen as part of a comprehensive package? I mean, whenever you're looking at K-12 or university funding, should you always go back to your report? I mean, how do you make these public policy decisions?
Yeah, one of the themes underlying this report is that there's not a single thing, not a single lever you can turn to change and rectify the whole situation. You have to turn a lot of levers, and you have to do it hopefully in a coordinated fashion. And so it's best when you're devising public policy to make sure that whatever you do at the K-12 system is in sync with the university system and with industry. And so one thing that government can do is be a facilitator and be a convener and bring those separate groups together in a way that they're communicating that may be better and more than what they would on their own.
All right, John, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks.
John Hardin is Executive Director of the State Department of Commerce's Office of Science and Technology. Just ahead, we're going to get the history of workers' rights in North Carolina, particularly in the 1970s. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.